Welcome to episode 245 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. Today, we're going to be finding out about This Year's Brits, the GB Freestyle Championships, now back in the Alps, including news and an amazing young British rider coming up through the ranks. And we're going to look at Jibworks, a new company that's creating an amazing community for girls in snowsport. And we're going to learn about the Italian ski resort of Passo Tonale. As well as that, we have our regular snow reports. We'll be announcing the winner of our Vallon competition. Make sure you listen through to the end to find out if you've won. Plus, I'm going to be revealing a new UK snow challenge I'm attempting next month. Now, my name's Ian Martin. I'm your host today. I'd like to introduce my guests. Joining me for the first time on the show, I'm delighted to welcome Amelie Coburn from Jibworks. Hi, Amelie. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. Now, you've already made me jealous. We were chatting in the green room. You are out in the Alps at the moment. Whereabouts are you?
I'm currently in Tion in Switzerland, and I have just come from Les Deux Alpes, and before that was Thun and Avoriaz. So it's been a crazy few weeks.
I think I'm right in saying it's snowing pretty heavily. What, out the window right now?
Out the window. I wish I could show you. It is absolutely dumping. We had about a metre last night, and we can't even get outside. So perfect timing.
Okay, excellent. Well, we'll find out a bit more about the snow shortly. My second guest today needs no introduction from regular listeners. He joined me on the show almost, a dozen times, I think, mainly because, as he says himself, if it's snowing, I'm going. I'm delighted to welcome back Mike the Snow Richards. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Ian. Thanks very much for the invite again. Great to be back.
Whereabouts are you, Mike?
I'm back in Cardiff in Wales, recently returned from the location we will be talking about later, Passo Tonale.
Okay, and I know that you are our Welsh skiing expert. You were bemoaning the fact you haven't had so much snow out there. Any snow recently in Wales?
We were hoping we were going to get out yesterday. It did snow, but there wasn't enough for a coverage. It was just a little bit of a dusting up high, but not enough for any play, unfortunately.
Okay, excellent. Well, if it does snow again, then you can tell us about that. Finally, it's a real pleasure to welcome back Stu Brass. He is the co-founder and organizer of The Brits. I last spoke to Stu in a deep dive into his career, which included chatting about his work on the movie Chalet Girl and on Channel 4's The Jump. And I'll put a link in the show notes if you'd like to listen to that. Hi, Stu. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you. Yeah, fresh back from The Brits and a trip up the Lake District. So, yeah, getting a little bit of work done in the office now.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to start off with all of my guests on the show is to ask when you skied or snowboarded last. And from the conversation, I suspect it's going to be Amelie. When were you last on snow, Amelie?
2 days ago. Unfortunately, I haven't been out in Tion yet. Been too busy working. But, yeah, I don't ski enough, but I need to definitely ski a lot more.
Where was that on Tuesday? 2 days ago, excuse me?
In Teen.
What conditions great. Like in Teen?
They were pretty horrendous. It was very, very, very slushy and very sticky. So super glad there's been a dump here and apparently it's dumped there as well.
But the coverage was still pretty good. You're saying it was slushy, but you could ski all the way back down into Val Claret or Lac.
Yeah. So you could, there was definitely still snow everywhere compared to Les Deux Alpes last week, where you just couldn't even get down the home run at all.
Okay. Well, we've got our Floss Cockle, who's going to be sending us a snow report, which is updated as of today from Teen later. So we'll hear what she has to say. Mike, you are going to be talking a little bit later on about Passo Tonale. I'm probably guessing you haven't been on snow since then. Was that the last time you were on snow?
It was, yes. That was last Friday. It was our last day on snow. Great conditions, great spring conditions, everything open, top to bottom. Got slushy in the afternoon, but not overtly so. Fabulous 2 or 3 hours in that middle part of the day where the snow softened up and, yeah, great skiing, great views, fabulous sunshine.
Cool. Well, we'll talk more about Passo Tonale a little bit later on. Stu, you came back from Meyerhofen where the Brits were held. Was that when you were last on snow? And I mean, you were working. Did you get a chance to get on the snow yourself?
I did actually, yeah. We finished the event on the Friday, the 4th of April, and it was definitely getting a bit warm. It's a little bit lower down, is the Penkin Park in Meyerhofen. So it was definitely getting a bit low. But we did have a fresh snowfall at the start of the week, so everyone was getting, you know, knee-deep powder, which was quite a nice little treat for everyone. It was a bit hard to organize events. It postponed by slope style, but so actually we got a little bit of powder in, and then obviously when the event finished, we got a 3-day just cruising around on the Saturday. So yeah, I feel like I've had a little bit of a fill.
Cool. Well, if anyone's been looking at the webcams or following social media today, we're recording on Thursday the 17th. They will know there's been a huge amount of snow, as Amelie said earlier, around a metre in Verbier and similar amounts elsewhere in the Alps. We are nearing the end of the season now. A lot of resorts are closed or closing this weekend, but we do have some snow reports. So let's hear from a couple of our reporters in resorts. We've got Alex Irwin from 150 Days of Winter in Courchevel, Andy Butterworth with Kalumaski in St. Anton. And then we'll hear from Floss Cockle from Free Flow Floss YouTube channel. He's reporting from Teane, and that is still open for another couple of weeks.
Hi, Ian. Alex from 150 Days of Winter with probably the final snow report of the Three Valleys this winter season. As I write this, I'm looking outside at the starts of a major snowfall, which always happens near the middle to end of April. We're expecting over half a metre of fresh snow, which, for any of the clever peeps who booked a sneaky break in April, they will have not only great snow, but almost private peace. Courchevel and the Three Valleys officially closes on Monday, the 21st of April. Courchevel's are closing with the utterly insane, to a non-mountain biker, dirt bike downhill mountain bike race from the summit of Solier to Alpinium in Le Bras, a 1,400-metre descent over snow, ice and mud. Val Thorens, on the other hand, is open until the 4th of May. If you are Dutch, you will know this is the end of the infamous Dutch week, where Val Thorens goes orange as the population of the Netherlands celebrate their royals by getting more drunk than normal at altitude. Val Thorens also celebrates their closing weekend called Le Grand Dernier, where there are plenty of events, races, water skims, you get the idea. Really going out with a bang. And on that, I hope you had a good winter, and I hope Ian has kept you vaguely interested with his podcast. I wish you all the best until my next snow report, probably from Teane. And on that bombshell, have a good summer. Ciao.
Hi, everyone, and happy Easter. It's Andy over in St. Anton with the last snow and ski report of this current winter season. As the lifts all close on Tuesday the 22nd, that's the season done and dusted. The weather... well, it's taken a sudden turn. We haven't quite had the snow that the French and some of the Swiss Alps have had, but we have had some of the weather coming up, sweeping up from the Southern Alps, going over into Italy, dumping most of the water and rain around the Lake Garda and the Southern Dolomites. We didn't quite get the same snowfall, certainly not the 1 metre plus that Courchevel and Verbier and Val d'Isère have been having, but we did get a good sprinkling over the last 24 hours. So we've gone from the sort of like 16, 17 degrees in town to suddenly minus two today. The snow conditions up the top are still extremely good. Got to be honest, like coming down lower, it is a little bit green. You can see the green slopes and all the shoots and the flowers, and spring had pretty much sprung. But now winter is kind of back, but I'm sure it's only going to be for a few more days. But up high, top of Valuga, almost at 3,000 metres there, we still got 140 centimetres of snow. Top of the Galzig and Gampen Mountains is about 113 centimetres of snow still, which is epic. Fresh lines yesterday, fresh lines this morning. You can't grumble with end-of-season April conditions. It really is fantastic skiing. Luckily, the nights have stayed cold for the last two or three weeks, so the piste conditions have been pretty close to awesome. It's just the off-piste has been almost non-existent for a lot of the season, unless you're an avid ski tourer and like getting off into the backcountry where the snow, by all accounts, from speaking with all the guides, has been pretty phenomenal. So although we haven't had the full snowfall this winter, we have had enough that the snow conditions have been good, the piste skiing has been great. And right at the end, as I always like to say, it always snows in April. It snowed early April, gave us a good dusting on the 1st or 2nd. And now on the 16th, 17th, 18th of April, winter has literally come back. It's blue skies again today. It's still cold. It's still in the minuses up the top. It's still in the minuses down in the village. It won't last for long. The warm weather's coming back in the next few days, but that means the Easter weekend and the last few days of skiing are going to be excellent. We've had a great season. I hope you've all had a great season. It's been a pleasure to do these podcasts for Ian and the Ski Podcast, and we look forward already to next winter. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Floss from Free Flow Ski, bringing you the snow report from Tiene and Val d'Isère. Now, you've probably already heard the latest news, but this week it has been mental weather. We've had warm spring temperatures at the start of the week and gentle winds, followed by the storm of the season. Now, just in 24 hours, we've had 70 to 140 centimetres of snow, which has fallen as low as 800 metres in Bourg-Saint-Maurice. Now, all ski resorts in the Tarentaise Valley, which are still open, have been closed and lift passes have been refunded. People have been warned not to leave their accommodation as it's been so dangerous in the last 24 hours. It is one of our biggest storms in the season, if not for the last 4 years. Now, because of the heavy snowfall, avalanche level has launched to its highest of all season, a 5 out of 5. And over the next few days, we're actually looking at more calm, gentle conditions and settling with the snow. The fresh snow really is going to set the piece on fire and be so good. So if you can, grab a winter break and come out and ski and ride. You won't be disappointed by the end of the season. Tiene and Val d'Isère actually closes on the 4th of May. Wishing you a very happy Easter, everybody. All the best from Free Flow Floss.
Well, evidently, there's quite a lot of snow still out there in the Alps, particularly after the last couple of days. And quite a few of those resorts will be open into May. Gromonte will be opening, Chamonix through to May, Verbier, Val Thorens. So if you're lucky enough to be able to go right now, this weekend could be an amazing time to get out there. So if you happen to be one of the lucky ones who's about to enjoy the tail end of the season, don't forget, you can help the Ski Podcast and save yourself some money on your ski hire by using the code SKIPODCAST at intersportrent.com. Alternatively, simply take the link in the show notes and your discount will automatically be applied. I mentioned at the top of the show a new UK Snow Challenge plan for May that I have. Now, quite some time ago, one of my listeners suggested a fun idea would be to ski all 5 of the UK's indoor snow centres in a single day. Now, I'm really sorry to whomever suggested it, as I can't remember your name, but I'd like to thank you for that idea, because on Friday the 30th of May, I'm going to set off to ski a minimum of 10 runs at Tamworth Snow Dome, Chill Factory in Manchester, Snow Zone Yorkshire in Castleford, Snow Zone Milton Keynes and Hemel Hempstead. It's quite a physical and logistical challenge. But apart from the fact I think it'd be quite fun, I'm doing it to raise funds for the snow sports youth charity Snow Camp. I don't know if you know these guys, but they started in 2003. They've helped turn around the lives of over 20,000 young people using the power of snow sports. And, you know, look, I'm going to cover this in more detail as we get nearer to the time. If you'd like to know more about Snow Camp, or you'd like to sponsor me for this challenge because I'm trying to raise funds for them, then have a look in the show notes for all the details. Right, let's move on to some GB news. If you listen to our last episode, you'll have heard Molly Butler, the 18-year-old skier on her first season of Europa Cup. I'm delighted to report she became the ladies' slalom champion at the British Championships. And I was also delighted to see there was success for Team Carrick Smith, who you might recall are sponsored by the Ski Podcast. Freddie took the Team GS title and his brother Zach took the under-21 overall champion title. Now, around the same time, over in Meyerhofen, the freestyle equivalent, the Brits was back in the Alps, I think I'm right in saying, for the first time since the pandemic. And I'm really pleased to have the organiser, Stu Brass, with us today. Firstly, can I just check about that? Is that the first time you've been in the Alps since the pandemic?
Yeah, we had 2019 was the last one that we organised in Lax. And then we were obviously scheduled to run it in 2020 at the end of March. But obviously that's when everything hit the wall, isn't it? I mean, literally the start of March, and yeah, everything got cancelled for, as we know, for some time. And then we struggled to find a resort to kind of put back in a couple of years later, because there were still restrictions in 2021, and 22 was a little bit sketchy still in some of the countries. I think Austria may have had more strict restrictions than what Switzerland had at the time. So it was a bit more difficult. And then we went to Scotland in 23 24. We went to Tamworth, and then now finally back in the Alps. So yeah, it's been 6 years since we've run the Brits back in the Alps, and it's actually 24 years since we're in Meyerhofen.
So 2001 was the first edition.
That was the last time it was in there, because the British Snowboard Championships has been going since 1989. That was the last time, 2001, it was actually organised. We took it on, Soul Sports, me and Spencer, 2002. So, yeah, it's been quite a few years since we've been running it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I mentioned before that we had quite a long chat about your background in the industry and how you came through with that group of riders, I guess, who were the vanguard, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And then yourself and your business partner, Spencer, ended up setting up the business of Soul Sports, which you mentioned, where you have helped riders find sponsors, etc., and then running a lot of events. There was the AIM series, which was a selection of events around the UK and all of those snow domes that I just mentioned. And that culminated, didn't it, with the Brits out in the Alps every year. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. We set out in like 2002, 2003 to rejuvenate the British snowboard scene. I think it had taken a dip in the late 90s after its sort of boom day. The money wasn't being filtered back into the sport the same way, and there wasn't the grassroots element anymore. So that's when the AIM series began. So it's artificial indoor mountain series. And we created that with, you know, with Ed Lee, for example. You know, it was me, Ed and Spencer that set that ball rolling. And it was great. It was such a good scene. I mean, we went around schools and we had support from the SIGB to offer kids free lessons. And it was a really good, obviously, you know, funding changes. And I think our heyday was probably up to like 2008. And then if I look at the numbers of competitors and the decline, it struggled to kind of keep that momentum going.
Yeah, well, the AIM series definitely brought a lot of people in, and there was that era of, you know, what we think of now as the fridge kids, because it wasn't just snowboarding, it was freestyle skiing as well. And we're talking about, I think I'd be right in saying that people who competed in your events back in the day would have included people like James Woods, for example, or Paddy Graham, people I've interviewed on the podcast before. Is that right?
100%. Yeah, those guys. We did the first freestyle championships in 2004 in Leathers Alps. And yeah, those guys were right on that, you know, James Woods, Paddy Graham, Eddie Thelwell, Rob Taylor, there was a whole, you know, Murray Buchan, you know, they've all gone on to have families and, or become coaches or in some fashion, they're, you know, still involved in the industry, which is lovely to see.
I mean, it's great to see they're still in the industry now, but this was the kind of training ground, these type of events within the UK snow domes, and then what you did in the Alps and kind of almost preparing them for that kind of World Cup circuit. And a number of those riders you mentioned went to the Olympics as well, I think.
Definitely. It was to try and provide a pathway so that kids from, you know, a local school could come and have their first free lesson, see an event going on, hopefully get the buzz of excitement of not just going to a normal dry slope or indoor, but there's some music and there's some good riders going around. It's a really good vibe. And they feel like, oh, this could be my community. I could get involved with this. So that's definitely what the seed was set.
Oh, and then when we think about the Brits now taking place in 2025, what was the kind of support for that like? I'm thinking that probably a lot of these people who are coming to, you know, take part probably in their first overseas championship have been learning their art in those UK snow domes and maybe outdoor slopes as well.
It's changed quite a lot. I mean, for example, the funding of the event was very much through sponsorship. So we had, you know, the industry brands that were supporting the event right up through to, say, 2012. You know, we had the likes of Quicksilver, Billabong, Animal, Trespass, all of these, you know, the big clothing brands, but they dropped off or had different focuses. So we became more turned towards the resort. So, you know, destination marketing. So that's when Lax really kicked in and helped out. They wanted to use the event to promote. And it's the same now with Meyerhofen as well. Without those guys, we just, you know, we wouldn't be in a situation that we could host the event. And the same with Ellis Brigham and the Snowboard Asylum. And we had Pitched Clothing that they'll contribute something to the event which makes a difference and makes it happen. So that's a big fundamental change within the funding and how the event is sort of structured and worked. But the competitors and how they come to us, that has changed quite a bit. That's difficult because we haven't done for over 10 years. We haven't done the dry stopper. We do one indoor event a year. It's not enough to build a momentum. So we're reliant, and that's because we haven't got funding to do that. Now, either through sponsorship, we've never had any government or governing body funding for it. We're reliant, if you will, as a national championships, to look to other people. Local slopes are the perfect example. So you have things like the K Jam, you've got the Farmers Jam, you've got these local events that are going on at dry slopes and indoor events. And Snow Sport England are starting to do a series of events. They've got the Futures Project. You've got the Snow Sport Scotland are now starting to invest in a series of events as well around their mountains. And we're totally reliant on that being our feeder. It's become quite apparent now that, you know, we've had a 6-year gap. And that's a big difference. To give you an example, in 2019, Mia Brooks won the under-12 championships. She was also good enough to win the overall, you know, in slopestyle. And obviously now she's, you know, 18 and she's the top. You know, she's right there with numerous accolades, including the Crystal Globe. There's that gap, and it's like, well, where do we identify these kids? So we had loads of kids at the indoor event, which was fantastic because there was a resurgence of a lot of skiers and snowboarders that have been using the domes. For us, one sort of battle we've talked about with Snow Sport England and Scotland is how do we then get the parents to bring the kids out? If the parents don't ski or snowboard, but you've got these amazing kids that are doing the sport. So the idea of running camps and coaching and then trying to sort of allow kids to come away with organized groups, I think it'll be the future of how some of this new generation, and also down to cost as well. It's not the cheapest of sports to get involved with.
For sure. So that's interesting. So the events that are going on that are being put on by the different venues in the UK are helping to, you know, generate interest. But what was the turnout like then? Was the event this year well supported?
In our heyday, we would have had 265 competitors, and at 2006, 2008 was around the average. That was the prime time. So we had, yeah, like I said, 260, 270 in unique competitors across ski and snowboard. And 2019, it dropped down to 150. And then obviously we've had a gap. And this year was just over 100 that we had competing. So we've definitely seen a drop off. And now it's a case of the kids and the people that did come, they can then go back to their communities and say, oh, do you know what? Because the barrier to entry for some people is the British Ski and Snowboard Championships. I'm not good enough. It's going to be massive jumps. They're just going to see the likes of, I'm going to be up against Mia Brooks or that kind of echelon of riders. And actually, we cater for as young as 6-7 years old that can do a basic box or get down a ski or snowboard cross course. So we do cater for everyone because it gives them that taste of being in the start gate at a young age, feeling pressure or whatever it be, you know, rather than jumping in when they're much older. So you are building that.
Clearly a great opportunity for, you know, younger aspiring competitors to take part in. You mentioned Mia Brooks earlier about how she won the overall, I think you said, when she was under 12 in 2019. That has now, I guess, been repeated, because it seemed to me that, you know, this year's event went really well. But the standout story was Riley Sharp. I was reading about him earlier, took the slope style and the big air title, and he is 10 years old.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, his dad is from Yorkshire. His mum's from Florida, and they managed to spend quite a bit of time out in the Alps and over in the States as well. So he's getting a lot of snow time. Amazing talent, not just being able to the tricks he can do. He's actually got style as well. So, I mean, you know, from a snowboarder's perspective, that's, you know, as revered. Yeah, he's quite a talent. And they're fun kids as well. You know, you get that age group of kids coming onto the podium and twerking and just messing around. And they're fun. It's really nice to see, because it's a good community of people. But yeah, he's an amazing talent.
Excellent. That must be really satisfying for you as the organizer. Yeah, I looked it up. He's 10 years old now. So according to what I read, he'd have to wait until he's 15 to be able to take part in the World Cup and 16 for the Winter Olympics, which would mean he'd be eligible for the 2034 Winter Games, you know, if that trajectory continued. But, you know, I saw a couple of clips on your Instagram channel. He is clearly an amazing talent. And I guess if he's following in the path of Mia Brooks with the sort of levels that he's reaching at that age, then we should be watching out for him, right?
Yeah, I think his home is about 10 minutes down the road from where Mia happens to live as well, quite randomly.
I read that as well. Do they not have like the same coach or something like that, or someone giving them same advice?
No, they don't. But there's a lot around. I had a few conversations with Leslie McKenna that's sort of taken on board a bigger role at GB Snowsport now, and she's sat on the global on the FIS Park and Pipe committee as well. And trying to avoid kids having blowout at young ages is quite key, and also to try and restrict the strain and stuff and the number of competitions and how they go about it is quite on a global scale quite of interest, because they may even increase the age from 15 up is potential as well. So.
Okay, that's very interesting from a couple of points of view. I mean, you mentioned Leslie McKenna. I'll put a link in the show notes. I've interviewed her before on the podcast. She talked about that role. It's really interesting to hear that she's using her experience to bring that in. And then you mentioned about, you know, younger athletes doing too much too soon. Again, I interviewed Ed Lee. I'll put a link in the show notes. So one of the things he said was that, you know, sometimes when those athletes, you know, they get, let's say, the Red Bull helmet or something like that, you know, really early on, then it can kind of, you know, put them off kilter a little bit. It's very hard to kind of keep that focus.
It is, and they can kind of get a little bit above themselves. Not, you know, not in a horrible way. They're kids and they're learning to, you know, how to, they're following a roller coaster, and it's people around them that need to help manage that, expectations as well. And there's a lot of hype or stoke coaching going on. And sometimes I think there needs to be bringing it down. I'm not qualified for any of that side of it, but what I listen to from other people and how they go about it and trying to manage it is, it seems like it's a concern. I don't know what the outcome is, but it's definitely something to be considered.
Cool. Well, I mean, that's brilliant, Steve. Thanks for bringing us up to date on that. And, you know, I guess I'd like to say on behalf of the British snow sports community, you know, thanks for continuing to put these events on, because I know that they're not, you know, like a massive profit earner for you. You're really doing it for the benefit of the sport and for all these young kids who are getting that opportunity to compete and to develop. So I really appreciate that and sharing that with us.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's become a bit more of a labour of love for us, but like we've given back, it's given us so much over the years that we're putting back into it. And that's the same for a lot of people. You know, it's nice to see like the riders that have come through, like we talked about, the skiers that have come through and are now still actively working within it. And it's really great to see, you know, like Jibworks is a classic example. There's, you know, another entity born out of the love of freestyle, and obviously very much catering a lot on the, you know, on the university side. And that's for us as a national championships is an audience that there are a lot of students that are in that 17 to early 20s age group that could easily compete at something like the British Championships and probably do quite well, you know. And it's trying to find, I think, all these synergies and relationships to bring everything together again is quite important.
You've done my segue for me there, because I had freestyle on the mind, but you set it up perfectly. Let's move on to Amelie then, from Jibworks. And I guess the first thing probably we should clarify, I mean, Stu's given us a clue there, but, you know, what is Jibworks? What are you trying to do there?
Jibworks is a snow sports events provider. So we run about 30 to 40, maybe more than that, events across the year. I think I've done 3 this week. So it's pretty busy. Essentially, if a brand or a company wants to do an event on the slopes, we can kind of run it. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's pond skims, rail jams, park jams, coaching clinics, sledge slaloms, done Santa ski runs before. Anything you can think of on snow, we can basically run it. But we are originally a freestyle company, but we've sort of like diversified over the last few years.
Right. Well, I like the sound of that. As someone, you know, myself, when I was, you know, running natives back in the day, I've organized a few, you know, skier border crosses, big airs, like stars and things like that in the Alps. You make it sound very easy. I recall that it was very difficult organizing and that sort of thing. You got the weather, which you referred to earlier, that you have to deal with, as well as the logistics of putting it all together. But you've just been traveling around. Is it predominantly for university students that you're putting on the events?
So we have a complete like mixture of events. So we work with Wasteland Travel at the moment, who's a student tour operator. So we run rail jams for their unis, which I think in the past was more like the main stickler of events. And then as of recent, we will partner with like way bigger brands. So we work with Dope Snow quite largely, Peak Performance. We're the official event providers of Snowbox Festival and Rise. And we're currently out in Tion, as I mentioned. We're volunteering with a company called Central Parks to build Europe's largest pond skim. However, it's not looking super sunny, so I'm not sure how lovely it's going to be. But yeah, so we do kind of do everything from, we have athletes who are about 8 years old all the way to, I want to say our oldest athlete is 37. So it's all kind of ages.
Oh, trust me, 37 sounds really young to me. I like the idea of all of those events putting on, particularly the pond skim. You know, I see a lot of pond skim stuff is going on over in the States at the moment as they're moving to the end of the season. It's a brilliant social media content from that type of thing. I saw one guy who did like a front flip and still managed to get across.
It's nuts. I'm the marketing and events manager at Jibworks. So I always get given my day off on pond skim. I don't know how it happens, but I always end up turning up anyways because I'm just like, the content that comes out of it is so gold. And we get the most viral videos from it. It's a lot of work to make the pond skim happen, but it just looks so good. And it's so much fun at the end of it.
Oh, and, you know, as well as, you know, putting on a lot of different events like that, I think as well, some of the events are exclusively for girls, or you've been focusing on, let's say, providing snow sports for the female market, trying to create a community there.
Yes. So I have been very lucky to be working for Jibworks for, it's going to be 3 years in June, but I actually just graduated from uni in June. So I was working at Jibworks alongside my uni degree, which was chaos, but I somehow managed it. And in that, I kind of started to realize that there's really not a lot of girls in freestyle. Free ride is getting better, but it's still not there. And in industry, I think there's still not quite enough women. So I got to do my diss in May, and I decided to do my diss on what snow sports brands can do to increase the participation and visibility of women. And with that, I had to do a creative outcome, which was how you can essentially target that issue. And in that, I came up with something called the Girls Archive, which is a UK-based community for girls in snow sports. We launched it officially in October, and it is just absolutely blown up more than we could ever imagine. There's four of us who started it, and every single day we pinch ourselves because it is crazy, and it is makes us all so happy.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm going to translate for our older listeners. Your diss is your dissertation, right?
Yeah. Degree. It was, yeah.
Go on. So that must have been really, firstly, like that's the ideal, isn't it? Being able to pick a dissertation topic that's incredibly of interest to you, but clearly very motivating as well. So in terms of that community, I think you're trying to, you know, get more girls involved and feel comfortable in the sport. So some of the events you've done are exclusively for girls. Is that on the university side of things?
So Jibworks itself is a company, and the Girls Archive is a completely separate kind of entity now. It's its own community. So far this season, since we launched in October, we have run 5 Girls Archive events, which are simply just for girls focusing on freestyle or free ride, one of the two. We've done 3 international events. So we did one in Meribel, we did one in Val Thorens, and we've done one in Desalpe. And then we've done 2 in the UK. Across these 5 events, we are so lucky that we've had about 200 girls getting involved in it. We've also supported Peak Performance with their event called Lines of Our Own, which was in partnership with the Freeride World Tour, which had 50 girls in it, getting more girls into freeride snow sports, teaching them all avalanche safety clinics, getting them to ride with some pro athletes just to kind of give them a bit more motivation, a bit more like, this is where I could be. And we've also run a Girls Archive, part of something called the Dome Split Series with Monster Energy, which is to try and find the UK's best uni freestylers. So we decided to incorporate our own girls section of the comp because there originally wasn't enough girls for me in it. So I decided to bring in a whole another section. And also our biggest thing is that we make a community. So we currently have a 400 person strong UK girls community group chat, where everyone talks about things all day. I honestly don't even know what goes on most of the time in it, but it's just girls talking about anything and everything to do with snow sports. And it is incredible to see. And every time we do an event, I think all of us who run it, our favorite thing is the feeling afterwards, because there's nothing like girls supporting girls. And it's just so mad to see how much girls have improved in such like a short space of time. It really, I feel so grateful to be a part of it, but
I mean, that sounds brilliant, Emily. And I think, I don't know if you've listened to any of the back episodes of the podcast, but one of the things I've sort of focused on this season is interviewing women in the ski industry, in the snow sports industry, and trying to highlight their stories. But I'm kind of interested. We obviously have some extremely talented freestyle athletes. Athletes like Mia Brooks or Zoe Atkin, are they, you know, someone that the Girls Archive, you know, look towards or use examples or inspire everyone?
100%. We've got even people like Kirsty Muir, a massive girls influence. Anyone who started in a dome or a dry soap in the UK for us and then went up, like Mia, like anyone like that, is just crazy for us to watch. But for us, it's not necessarily just about the big dogs. As much as it's incredible to see what they're doing, we like to focus as well on a lot of our younger athletes. So on our team of Girls Archive founders, we have a girl called Ella Hall, who is a really young athlete. I think she's just turned 16, but she's really, really moving up through the ranks. And so Sandra, and then we've got Hattie, who's super young. Hattie's just the cutest little soul ever. I just want to wrap her up. But it's just for us, it's not necessarily about looking to the big ones. It's how we can make the girls who are in that little middle ground, want to support them, sponsor them, give them as much visibility to push them up to get to where the other girls currently are.
Oh, is that Sandra Cohn?
It is.
Yeah, okay, excellent. Well, I mean, she picked up a title, I'm going to say, at the European Junior Olympic Festival, something like that. Yeah. It was the first time I came across her. And then we discovered more latterly, I'll put a link in the show notes, but Bethany Garner interviewed Kirsty Muir for us out in Teen. And they're really close buddies, aren't they? They know each other from Scotland. So, you know, those connections that you're referring to are really strong. So that's great work that you're doing there. I wonder if I could just swing it back to Jibworks slightly. I was looking around your website. You have an amazing event vehicle. I wonder if you could just describe that and how it gets used.
So back in, I want to say it must have been 3 years ago now, and it was a Beers and Ideas idea. We decided to import an American school bus from New York, which was a crazy experience. We completely renovated it with the guys from Shred and Butter, who did an amazing job. It looks amazing inside. I would live in it full time. But essentially, the cool part about this bus is it's got a platform at the top, which we can have our own attachable dry like ski slope down the side of it. So it's got its own ramp. And it also has DJ decks that can pull down from the side. And it's been out to the Alps, I want to say, 3 times now. And we've run snow sports events out there. So we've done rail jams with it. It also did a massive event with Peak Performance in Covent Garden in September, where we imported crazy amount of snow, dumped it in the middle of Covent Garden. We had Alex Hackle, we had all kinds of riders dropping in down it in the middle of London, which is a pretty wild experience. But it's quite a crazy bus, and it goes very slowly up the hairpins up to the mountains. I can promise you that. But it's a very, very cool bus, and I'm very lucky to have it.
I bet it does. And what I'll do is I'll stick a couple of photos into the show notes on the website. But that's great, all the work you're doing there, Emily, with both the Girls Archive and Jibworks. And I think there's clearly going to be a crossover to the Brits and people coming through into the freestyle scene. So that's excellent. I'll put links to both of those into the show notes. If it's all right with you, I'm going to turn to Mike now. Yes. Mike, you were just out in Passo Tonale in Italy. I think you said you were skiing up until Friday. So you were probably out there for a week's holiday, was it?
I was, yes. As you know, you're very well aware, when you work in the winter sports industry in the UK, you wear many hats. So I was on the tools for the last week, repping for Equity, the school travel company, with a school from Runcorn near Liverpool. Met them at Manchester Airport, and then we all flew out together to Passo Tonale for the week, for the first week of the Easter holidays.
All right, okay. I thought this might have been one of those options. I think the last time we spoke to you, you had just been out to Bulgaria and picked up a crystal last-minute deal for that one. I wondered if this was another of your last-minute things, but this is more of a pre-planned thing.
Yeah, I'd met Ian Davis, who you've come across with Equity, when he came to visit Erciyes in Turkey, where I'd been for most of the winter, to see if it was a viable option to add to their portfolio for the school ski program. And over conversations, he said that they had an opportunity to have representatives over the Easter break. So I went on the wait list and then got a last-minute call-up. And then they sent me to Passo Tonale, which I'd not been to before. So I was more than happy to accompany the group from Runcorn then.
Yeah. And you've recorded for us before. I've chatted to you on the podcast before about Medissimo in Italy, probably another, you know, lesser known resort. But tell us a little bit about Passo Tonale then. What's it like and where is it? How would people find it?
So we flew from Manchester Airport, and there's a number of ways into the area. We went from Manchester to Verona, which is about a 3-hour drive from Verona Airport back up to the mountains. Same from Milan and Innsbruck. And there are more regional base flights, an hour and a half, if you can manage to land in Bolzano or Bergamo. And it's on that cusp of the Dolomites coming up from Verona and the Brenner Pass coming down from Innsbruck. You can take a train as well, London. I know you've been using the trains a lot. So London, Paris, Milan, Tirano. And then you take that last 1-hour bus ride up from the train station for a 14-hour journey. So overall, you know, there's lots of access points in. I think it's not as popular as some of the resorts because of that up to 3-hour transfer time. But then as a consequence, then it makes it very, very quiet. We stayed in a family-run 3-star hotel right on the main road. And it is a main road that links the Lombardy region with the Trentino region. And then either side of the road are hotels. And then one side of the road, you've got the access to the slopes, ski and ski out hotels and shops and what have you, restaurants for the Tonale side of the skiing. And then the other side of the road, you've got the Prosenna Glacier, which goes up to 3,000 meters. So there's a good combination. And then the other side of the pass, when you go down into Lombardy, you'd go down to Ponte di Legno, which is a more established village town that has a lot more bed and breakfast and self-catering accommodation for the groups coming in from the cities, which is primarily weekends.
Okay, so if you're staying in Passo Tonale then, what kind of size resort are we talking about? I mean, you mentioned you got the Prosenna Glacier, so clearly it's going high, up to 3,000 metres. What's the altitude of the resort and the type of area that's available?
So at Tonale, you're at 1884 at the pass when you crest the pass. So you're practically starting from the side of the road there. The lifts are all based there. Great setup at the lift side, the roadside there, because you've got three kind of main base areas that have hotels and an accommodation there. They've all got covered magic carpets. And then either surface lifts or chairs right beside it. So the progression is fantastic. It's very much advertised and marketed as a learn-to-ski family kind of resort, which is the ones that I tend to go for these days because, as a consequence, then no resort is only family, and no resort is only beginners only. So then once you get past that first level of where the majority of the people are skiing, the rest of the resort is deserted the whole time you're there then. So it's got great terrain, lots of different runs, different grade of runs, lots of lifts on the one side. And it goes from about 1880 to about 2000, just under 2600. So about 700 vertical meters.
So putting that into context, I mean, 1880, there's a clue there. It's as high as the top of Courchevel. It's higher than Val d'Isère, Zermatt, higher than the village of Verbier itself. So you're really high, which you know, if you're going to be skiing late in the season like this on a school trip, definitely a good thing. I'm interested, you said, you've got the family slopes and you could get away. Did you not have any kind of responsibilities in the day looking after the kids? Is that part of the deal or is that only outside of skiing hours?
No, it's part of the deal. So every morning there were 20 children and then they had 5 staff members. So they had a great ratio. And then myself as well. And then between us all, we'd walk up, and it was only about a 200-meter walk from our hotel on a fairly slight gradient from the hotel to the lifts. And then we stored all our equipment at the lift but kept the boots back in the heated boot room in the hotel. But even walking up and down in the lifts, and I did that in the ski boots, I did that a couple of times, and it wasn't a big deal. It was actually an interesting experience for me because I hadn't taken my own equipment because it was last minute. So I rented boots and rented skis for the first time in about 30 years. And the technology has moved on immensely. When you were talking with Al earlier in the season about new equipment, I tried out a pair of the Boa boots. And it took me a couple of days to really get the feel for it because, number one, they were bigger than and not as tight-fitting as my normal ski mountaineering boots are. And I've been skiing center-mounted twin tips for the last 20 years or so. So now I was back on a traditionally mounted ski, so there was a bit more in front of me, a little less behind. But once I got the hang of it, super comfortable, super warm. And so the equipment has come on in massive strides. But it did put me in the frame of mind where you could see these kids who were learning for the first time of how they didn't quite get it to start, but then once they found their feet on the skis, it all came together.
Great. Well, that's really good to hear about people coming into the sport and also that you've been listening to our equipment episodes. I did have a look on the website for Passo Tonale and I noticed that night skiing was an option. Was that on while you were there? Did you or the kids try it at all?
Yeah, that was one of our evening activities, night skiing. There's not a huge area. It's a really nice red run that goes maybe just over a kilometre long, but it's a very different experience. We had clear weather when we were there. There wasn't a threat of a little bit of snowfall, but it never materialised. It's all coming now. But yeah, it was great. It was crisp. The ski was fast because it had softened up in the afternoon. And then the piece passing machines had been right on it. They groomed it to perfection, and then it firmed up just nicely. It hadn't really got really hard by that point. We skied from 8:30 till about 10 o'clock, but it goes from 8:30 till 11, and then they regroom it again then in time for the morning skiers the following morning. But it was great. The kids loved it. They were let off the leash a little bit, so they were kind of bombing down. And there was a group from Belgium that were in the hotel next to us, and they'd all come with fancy dress. So there were various skiing bananas and fruit and costumed kids running piling up and down the slopes. It was good fun.
Excellent. I also saw on the website there's a bit of a snow park there. I imagine the kids probably tried to enjoy the snow park.
Yeah, not massive at the moment. What the Tonale side, it's located between a number of runs, so you can have access to it, and people are doing circuits in it. Got a little bit of slushy in the afternoon, but what they do then towards the end of the season, now they'll start making the bigger parks up on the glacier side, so they'll be above 2,500 meters. And then they have a number of events up there, and they also have a number of concerts, you know, much like Ishkul has the end of the season type concert. They'll have music and food and drink, and then the sort of freestyle events up there.
Nice. And, you know, so it's high, it's no shore, still open for a little bit longer, or is it closing around this weekend like a lot of resorts?
So the Tonale side closed the weekend that we left. There's only the links that are open so that you can still stay at Tonale and take one or two runs that'll take you down via ski down to the glacier. And then you cross the road. It's a short, you know, just crossing a single lane road either side. And then you get on the glacier, and then the glacier's open then until, I believe, the first week in May.
Okay, excellent. Well, that is brilliant, Mike. Thank you for that and for another appearance on the podcast. Very kind with your time. We're just going to move to the close now. I enjoy finding out from listeners what you think about the show. I'm always interested to hear from you. So please do contact me on social at the Ski Podcast or by email theskipodcast@gmail.com. We had quite a bit of feedback on episode 243 when I spoke to Joy Hoffman and Sylvia Moser about the movie Going East. That's when they took that train all the way to Turkey via Slovakia, Bulgaria, and Romania. Skiing Postie on Spotify said, 234 was a very interesting episode, combining my two loves, skiing and train travel. You definitely need to be organised for a trip like that. Nigel Winter said, 234, great podcast. Love the story behind this epic trip. Train travel, skiing, different out-of-the-way places, even a skiing cat. Over on Apple Podcasts, Elizabeth Rose said, this is a lifesaver podcast getting me through to my next ski trip. I'm enjoying listening to the back catalogue. I love the snow report specials, features and equipment reviews. Thanks for raising awareness of climate change and the focus on women in snow sport. Also on Apple Podcasts, Bray Estate said, I've been a follower since the pandemic. It's kept my passion for skiing through the restrictive years, added to my knowledge ever since. There's always something new and interesting. That's very kind of you. To the many other people who send in reviews, thank you so much. I'm just going to include one more because we can only have one winner for the Vallon competition. The computer has done its job and it has picked out the user called Norsk Sarah, or possibly Norsk K Sarah on Apple Podcasts. And Sarah said, I've been a listener for the last year or so. I love it when a new episode drops. Topics strike a good balance between the most experienced and newcomers to the sport. Now, Sarah, I hope you're listening today. Please contact me by email, theskipodcast@gmail.com, with your address, and I will get those sunnies from Vallon sent through to you. In the meantime, don't forget Vallon's end of season ski sale is on right now. I think you can get 25 to 35% off. I'll put a link in the show notes for that. There are now 257 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, 140 of those to listen to in the last week. If you enjoyed this episode, just go to the skipodcast.com, look around the tags and categories. There is so much in there, you're bound to find something of interest to you. And in that last week, half of our listeners are in the UK, next most in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Iceland, South Korea, and Argentina. If you like the podcast, there are three things you can do to help. You can follow us. You can give us a review or leave a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can book your ski hire with InSport Rent using the code SKIPODCAST or take the link in the show notes. You can follow me at and the podcast at Ski Podcast. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of each episode. Look in the show notes for that link. Right. I would like to thank my guest today, Amelie. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Enjoy that snow when it stops and you can get out there.
Thank you. I'm about to go on the slopes.
Excellent. Steve, thank you very much.
No, thanks for having me, and good luck with your challenge around the indoor slopes. Are you going to do anything more creative? Are you going to like fancy dress on any of them, or do some of them switch? Or
well, I'm going to. I like all of those ideas. Well, 10 runs is not very much, but to fit them all in one day, I guess the extra challenge is I'm going to be doing it in an electric car. So I've got to kind of work out my charging and things like that as well, trying to, you know, overall kind of minimize my impact. Mike, thank you very much today.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to speaking again.
Cool. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.